WMFO Medford. Good morning, everybody. It's 9 a.m. I'm Mike, and I'll be with you till about 11 a.m. When Something About the Women comes in today, live in studio with Ryan Doyen sitting in for the women at 11 a.m. So this morning, I've got a bunch of new noise. I've got some freeform, but I've got a guest as well, Greg Allen from Greg Allen's Fringe Religion is here, and we'll talk to him at about 9:30, and until then, I'm going to start with some new noise. I'm going to try to get a bunch of new noise in as much as I can. Maybe something from Days on Parade, Sharp Class, that great band from the UK, Dan Fallon from Boston, the Rupert Selection from Boston, and the first one is from a band called the William Loved Intention. I just found this, and I couldn't find much about them at all, which is kind of good. Mystery is cool. So, new noise from the William Loveday Intention. This is Seasons of the Witch. It's a great cover to start us off today at WMFO.
Sights to see. Oh, season of the witch. Must be the season of the witch.
Heart's breaking in the night. there's a devil in her eyes. Oh, it's serious, so serious. A kiss that caught the wind and made you delirious. Oh, it's serious, so serious. Take her in your arms, don't be afraid. Never be afraid. The stars burn bright above. There's a kindness in her eyes. There's no darkness in disguise. Oh, but when you are alone, all your heart it turns to stone. Hearts breaking in the night. There's a devil in her eyes. It's serious, so serious. A kiss that caught the wind and made you delirious. Oh, it's serious, so serious. Take her in your arms, don't be afraid. Never be afraid.
This is more like it.
You're listening to WMFO Medford.
WMFO in Medford, 9:20 in the morning. I'm Mike. How you doing? I've been here since 9. I'll be here with you till about 11 a.m. when Something About the Women comes in. Today, the awesome Ryan Doyen is sitting in for the women, and he'll be here starting promptly at 11. 9:30, we've got Greg and Corey from Greg Allen's Fringe Religion. They'll be on with me in here at about 9:30 or so. They've got a new record coming out, actually. We've got a bunch of stuff to play from there and a bunch of stories. They've got a lot of history, especially Greg, an interesting history. So we'll do that. And let me tell you what I played in that first set. And then we got a couple more songs just to get us to 9:30. Started with New Noise from a band called The William Loved Intention. As I said at the beginning, I have no idea where they are, who they are, anything about them. I just looked quickly as I found them, but it was a cool song that just came out here in 2023. See, I didn't say 2022. That's pretty cool. Season of the Witch, great cover of that. Rockpile from 1980, Seconds of Pleasure. That was Play the Fast Thing One More Time. A guy named Richard Hawley. In 2007, he had a record called Ladies Bridge. That was Sirius. The little supergroup called Golden Smog in 1995. They had a record called Down by the Old Mainstream. That was V, a great song. And speaking of great songs, the fifth song of the set rounded the whole thing out. Graham Parker from 2017, Squeezing Out Sparks. I think that must be a remaster. Local Girls from Graham Parker. All right, going to do about two more songs. Both New Noise, both Boston artists, just to get us down to around 9:30. The first is Rupert's Selection. They've got a brand new single out, and this is it right here. This is called Astronauts. It's New Noise at WMFO.
Please don't ask me many questions. Whatever I haven't done, I won't do. Please don't make this any harder. Whatever I have to run, I'll run too. Yeah, the river won't let me go. Yeah, the river won't.
WMFO in Medford. How you doing? Good morning. I'm Mike, and it's about 9:30 in the morning, just as I promised. I'm going to finish up that set, and I did with these two songs. Started with Boston's The Rupert Selection, brand new noise, brand new single for them called Astronauts. I love that band. They just kill it. And Dan Fallon, also from Boston, had a new EP that came out just last year called Some Song, spelled S-U-M. I'm going to talk to him about that. I don't know. It's not how you spell it. Anyway, I love that song, Dan Fallon and the River. All right, so I've got a couple of folks smiling across the desk from me. And yeah, one more than the other. Well, no, they're both pretty good smilers. Hi, Greg. Hi, Corey.
Hello.
How are you guys?
Fantastic.
Good.
Yeah? Yeah, you glad to be here at 9:30 in the morning on a Saturday?
I was hoping it would be a little earlier. But
yeah.
I think the time frame suits my needs.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking about this for a long time. I mean, Greg, when was the last... I have a whole bunch of notes that I'm going to work off of. And I think we did that like in 2021.
Don't remember.
Something like... Yeah, I know. It was so long ago.
Drinking 24/7 since.
Ah, good to hear. Good to hear. All right, so everybody out there that don't know Greg Allen, that was he that was speaking. He is the leader of this force called Greg Allen's Fringe Religion. And Corey, you're the guitar player for the band.
It's true.
I'm going to try not to lie today. Liars are not good.
I mean, I don't mind. You can say whatever you want about me.
Oh, Don't give me an
just
opening.
Make it good.
He's all insignificant. it's all about me. I mean, you can ask other band members prior to the, and it's all about Greg.
Well, listen, I'm going to prove that in just a second, because, you know, believe it or not, Greg, there are some people that don't know of you and the band.
Impossible.
It's hard to believe.
Impossible.
But, Corey, just before
I'm a household name, damn.
Yes.
Darn it. Darn
and,
it.
Yeah. Yeah, in the big house, I think. See what
perhaps.
I did? That was a joke there.
I got it.
It's very popular.
You're madcap. Yeah, you're madcap and zany.
Yeah. Wow, going back to the 40s. Mm. Awesome. So, Corey, how did you meet this character? How did you do that? When was that?
I think I found him on Craigslist or something like that.
Wait, sure, I was going to say a terrible joke. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, no, it was in the missed connections section on Craigslist.
That makes sense.
They were looking for a guitar player to do, like, you know, I think it said something about the Faces and Stones kind of stuff. And I said, I can do that.
Yeah, and you're like, yeah, it's just like what I want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
So, we're going to talk all about him, like he said. It's you know, all about Greg. But tell me a little bit about, your growing up and when you first picked up a guitar, if guitar was your first instrument and all that good stuff. Just tell us about you.
Yeah, it was my first instrument. I grew up in the Fort Worth, Texas area. Uh-huh. I've only lived up here for about 4 or so years.
Mm, but different, isn't it?
Yeah. I like it up here.
Yeah.
So I actually chose to move up here from there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I started playing when I was probably, 11 or 12, middle school age.
And was that that type of music, just kind of Stones,
At the time, it was more, classic rock in general.
Yeah.
I was really into, when I started playing, Guns N' Roses and Queen and AC/DC.
Mm-hmm. And your first band was about what age?
First band that I actually played some songs, probably 14 or 15.
Yeah. And it was a classic rock cover band, or you did originals?
No, by that time I'd gotten kind of into punk rock, so we were probably playing Sex Pistols songs, and I remember learning some Blondie with some friends, things like that.
So I would imagine that you didn't move up here because you joined Greg Allen's Free Religion, right? You were already here, and you saw the ad.
Yep.
Yeah. And that happened about 4 years ago when you came here?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
All right, cool.
I think I moved up here in December of 2018, playing with those guys the summer right after that.
All right, well, welcome to the area. Glad to have
you. Thanks.
All right, Mr. Allen. Oh, I'm sorry, did I lose you for a second there?
Just no. On the nod.
Listen, just to start this thing off, just to sort of expand on what I was saying before, that you may not be known by everybody that's listening, but we're going to change that today. I'm going to read two different perspectives that's been written about you. One was not by you, and one was by you.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. So Brett Milano wrote a really nice thing. If you go to fringereligion.com, you'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to write the following. This is from a very well-respected rock and roll writer, Brett Milano. He said, Greg Allen is a true believer who's played with a few of his heroes and probably a few of yours. He said, the music is rock and roll with a nod to all the greats. The band sounds simultaneously familiar and fresh. Hints of classic arena rock, power pop, sleazy glam, proto-punk, gut bucket blues, and even some country honk serve as backdrop to Allen's unique storytelling. It's pure rock and roll, the kind they don't make anymore. And then he had a recommendation. He said, come see Greg Allen's Fringe Religion and restore your faith in rock and roll. Now, those are really nice words.
I love Brett Milano.
Yeah, he loves you too.
Yeah.
But, I got to say too, just what he said was true. You for your famous sense of humor, you've got some real great music that you guys make. Now, I'm just sort of going down my Facebook page, and I have a post that you did the other day promoting your appearance here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, let's just compare and contrast, shall we?
This is
introduce you to Greg a little bit. He loves the music. He knows that he plays a lot of great stuff. But this is how he promoted today, just to give you an idea who he is. He said, Corey and myself will be on the Mike Newman Show next Saturday, January 7th at MFO. Then he said, we will be full of bravado and will attempt to lower the bar for what's considered real rock and roll as we know it by playing several songs off the longest pre-released record in history. with the exception of some weird Guns N' Roses thing, but that just wound up being nothingness in the end, he said. Then he said, invite your family and friends to sit around your Bluetooth speaker just like the old days, and feel free to call in with your random insults and criticisms. That last thing I don't really, we won't give you the phone number. But after that he said, and he meant it, we love all of you even more than your family members and closest relatives, and we're not kidding, keep the faith. So that just shows off a little bit of your thought process. You sort of look at the world in a unique way, for sure.
Kind of an opaque view.
Yeah.
But, you know, it makes sense to me.
Makes sense to
you know,
I mean,
when you're living in a self-absorbed bubble,
yeah,
you know, you usually come out with gibberish like that. So, I mean,
well,
but, you know, I just kind of call them like I see them, you know. And, you know, if I posted that with some other bands when I was younger or whatever, they would have been furious, like, you're telling the world we're idiots. Or
no sense of humor.
No.
Yeah.
A lot of these rock guys don't have a sense of humor. It's, you know, and I'm not trying to make a comedy show out of our performances,
no.
But on the other hand, you can't take 50-year-old men in a rock group too seriously either. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of people take themselves seriously at my age.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're dancing around, you know, with fire coming out of their ears on stage and stuff. And then they're done. You're like, hey, that's pretty funny. Like, what?
Somebody like, call 911.
Yeah. Somebody call 911. Yeah. But, you know, it's just the way it is, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I like the candor. And I like that, you know, not looking at yourself too seriously, because I kind of have that same affliction, actually. So we talked a little bit about your influences. I'll just sort of, they extend from the Stones, MC5, New York Dolls. That's a big one. Stooges, Kinks, early Aerosmith. And you grew up in Rhode Island.
Right.
And I saw that your mother was really instrumental in introducing you to a lot of great music when you were a kid.
Well, my dad, both of them actually. My dad was a jazz guitar player, and my mom played the violin, and my sister played the piano. So we're a fairly musical family. My uncle was a drummer.
That's awesome, yeah.
And my mother would get me like Beatles singles and stuff. And I think she was the first one. I remember being in the living room trying to mess around with the keyboards because I thought, you know, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer were cool for some reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I don't know, maybe it was from smoking catnip out in some tool shed, and I just decided that, you know, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer are actually good. And she said, no, come check this out on TV. And on TV were the New York Dolls on this new midnight special. And then she goes, look at the guitar player. It looks like he's been electrocuted. And after that, I said, this is the best band I've ever seen in my entire life.
I want to be electrocuted on TV.
I want to be electrocuted like Johnny Thunders. Yeah. And David Johansen looked like, you know, Mick Jagger's little teen daughter. You know, knock-kneed and screaming and yelling about stuff that didn't, you know, Frankenstein monsters or trash or whatever. I'm like, these guys, I don't know, this somehow became Mad Magazine meets the Rolling Stones or something, you know.
Yeah.
And that's when I lost it, and that's why I haven't had a really good job during the course of my life, because it would all, you know, came to...
It always came full circle back to wanting to set yourself on fire from your ears on stage.
Sure, yeah, jumping around trying to impress people at age 90, you know.
Yeah.
Still, you know, he won't stop, will he?
Now, even though you were looking at, you know, guitar players, you didn't start playing guitar. When you were a kid, you had a neighbor that you described as an army brat that introduced you to MC5, and you mentioned Kick Out the Jams.
Right.
And taught you how to play a different instrument.
Well, this fellow lived down the street, and he was an army brat, and he was a drummer, too, and his name was Scott, but he called himself Ginger because he loved Ginger Baker.
Okay.
And I hated Cream. You know, I wasn't a big fan of that. You know, my girlfriend's got a beard, dun dun dun, or you know, there's a line in one of the Cream songs, and the rainbow has a beard or something.
Okay.
None of the lyrics made any sense to me.
One of their more obscure tracks.
Weight Room. I don't know. I just didn't like it. Anyway, so he said, check this out. These guys are tough. And I said, what's this? And he puts on the MC5 Kick Out the Jams record. Like I said, we had just been smoking catnip out in his tool shed. And then we go into his you know, basement there with his drums and stuff and turn Kick Out the Jams on 10. So now I'm completely disoriented because I'm an 11-year-old boy on smoking catnip and listening to Kick Out the Jams. I'm like, another revelation, you know, I got to get this record. So that's when I got turned on to MC5. It was just like a giant car accident, you know, and the guitars are out of tune and some guy's yelling about a Ramblin' Rose or whatever.
So but you can't take your eyes off it.
No, you couldn't. You couldn't stop listening to it. I listened to it over and over, and everybody said, turn that garbage down. That is horrible. So I turned all my friends in the neighborhood onto the Kick Out the Jams album, and they're like, I'm like, what do you think? And they're like, I hate you, and I hate this record. So I didn't make many friends that year. I guess that was 71. I was kind of like, you know, the guy with the dunce cap in the corner of the classroom. Oh, very nice. But, of course, 20 years later, you know, all those same people can Kick Out the Jams, a cool album, right? I'm like, hey, man, you know, weren't you the same idiot that told me that stunk 20 years ago? Well, I never said that. You know how these guys are. Uh-huh. They're wearing like, you know, whatever. You know.
I just want to highlight something from that story. You've mentioned it twice now. Yeah. And maybe, Corey, you can back me up. I must have missed something. Smoking the catnip?
I find it fascinating, too. That's why I keep going back to it, because it's like, who came up with that idea?
Well, I always wondered why you can, like, crouch into a, you know, a position on the floor and then leap to the highest place in the room. Now I understand.
It's kind of like the key to understanding Greg's personality.
It kind of is.
And I ruined all my mother's furniture, too, by
jumping around
it,
like that,
know?
Yeah.
Well, you know,
scratching it up.
Just like, Greg just destroyed our couch. You know, he ripped it all up. Mm-hmm. He's been smoking catnip in the... You know, barn again with some hippie. So
Ginger, but not really his name.
Not really Ginger. Yeah. It was great watching him, you know, I'm a little kid and he's going up and some girl's going, hey, what's your name? And he's like, Ginger, baby. And I'm like,
and
oh
she's
my
thinking
God.
Gilligan's Island, what's wrong with this guy?
What a bag of cheese.
But yeah. Did he even have red hair?
He did, had goldish red. And
it was a wig.
No, it was actually his real hair, and he was a good drummer, and he taught me how to play drums. And that's how I started. And you know,
it wasn't a wasted effort. I mean, because you did have a couple of garage bands as a drummer, right?
I think mostly as a guitar player. I don't know if I played in any bands as a drummer. I did later on when I was in high school. I played drums for a couple bands, but
I mean, you said it didn't last long, right? Because you really wanted to play guitar because you wanted to be like the Dolls.
I wanted to be like, you know, Keith Richards, like everybody did.
Yeah.
I couldn't, and I wouldn't, and I'll never be. But, you know, I thought, you know, he was very inspirational for me because he was just, you know, he wrote great songs. And
yeah, and he's a great performer.
He's a great performer, and his attitude was pre-punk. He was sort of like, I remember one time they said, you know, the guy from Jethro Tull, Ian Anderson, said to this Anastasia Keith, Ian Anderson said that the Stones don't pay the taxes, and he goes, you know, what is that hippie acid freak know about taxes anyway? You know, it's just the funniest stuff, you know, would come out of his mouth. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, big influence.
Well, yeah, and you know, as you grew up, you had a lot of success. I mean, Greg, you've played all over the place. You've opened for a lot of your heroes, like Brett said. Yeah. Just to mention a couple, you opened in various bands, and we'll talk about a few of them. You opened for Johnny Winter,
yeah,
Blue Cheer, Nazareth, Johnny Thunder, Robin Lane and the Chartbusters, and Rick Derringer. Any of those, or a different one that you remember that you want to sort of tell us what that was like?
We used to play with the Neighborhoods a lot, the original Neighborhoods lineup in Providence, and they were absolutely fantastic. They were like, just as a three-piece band, you know. We played with them. That was always a lot of fun. I remember we played with Blue Cheer, and Dickie Peterson stayed over my house one night. It was the weirdest thing in the 80s, because Blue Cheer were the biggest, you know, a huge influence on, you know, heavy metal. And they did Summertime Blues, and it was like the loudest band. So we got a gig with them at Lupo's Heartbreak Hotel. And at the end of the night, Dickie Peterson, the bass player, comes up and says to me, what's going on after this? And I said, I'm going home. He goes, can I stay at your house? And I go, what? He goes, I don't want to stay with these guys. I'm sick of them. So I said, okay, fine. So then here I am with Dickie Peterson from Blue Cheer driving back to this little shack that I rented in Rhode Island. Let's go to McDonald's. And he had a manager that was a Hell's Angel, and he'd go, I love my manager. Then he'd turn around and go, I hate my manager. Don't you think he's a jerk? I go, I don't even know the guy, man. So I wake up in the middle of the night, Dickie Peterson's at my house. I'm thinking, my girlfriend's like, who's this nut? This like crazy motorcycle rider in our living room, you know? I wake up to see the kitchen on fire.
Okay.
Like 3 feet of fire coming off the stove, and Dickie's throwing those little goldfish that you buy, the cracker goldfish, on the fire to try to put it out. I guess he tried to make something to eat late at night, you know.
Oh, yeah. People get hungry,
almost burned my house down. He goes, I think the place is on fire. And I'm like, oh, boy, this guy is nuts. So his band members came and took him away the next day, and that was the last I saw of him. But that was an experience.
Well, what was it like playing with these bands that you got to open for, that you knew of and you listened to? I mean,
It was great.
Good experience.
Yeah, I mean, excuse me. I loved opening shows for bands like, you know, Derringer or Nazareth were the greatest guys in the world. They took us up to Boston the next day, and they were going to give us a bunch of equipment and help us make a record. Manny was going to produce our record. At that time, I think they were on MCA Records, and he goes, they liked our band, and they wanted to work with us. And they had a manager named Bob Bonas at the time, who was actually the Rolling Stones' first manager. And they said, we're going to get you in contact with Bob. It was just great experience playing with some of these bands, because some of these bands that you kind of liked, idolized when you were a kid, were really nice, great guys. And some were more arrogant jerks, you know. But for the most part, they were... musicians are pretty friendly people, and it was a great experience. We had these two girls, Dacia Vodolato and Hera Vodolato in Rhode Island, who helped us get these shows at the Living Room because they liked us. Mm-hmm. And so they were, you know, influential in getting us decent gigs back then.
Mm, cool. So we've established that you love the Dolls, you play guitar, did a little bit of drumming, catnip too.
Yeah.
And in 74, there was another instrument that you played for a little while, bass. As a bass player, you started a band, and it was called Raggedy Ann.
Well, actually, I was the guitar player in Raggedy Ann. And
okay.
The bass player was this guy named Dwarf. And Raggedy Ann was our, you know, our version of the Dolls in suburban Rhode Island in 1974.
Okay.
We're absolutely unacceptable in every situation.
And this was really your first...
My first vision of an ideal rock group.
Okay.
And, you know, we were a punk rock band, and we had these ridiculous songs, and we looked even more ridiculous. And once again, we were not, you know, put on a pedestal.
Yeah, I mean, you said that you wanted to be the Dolls in the Rhode Island suburbs, and you also added, failed miserably at that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think the first gig we did, we had the guy named Dwarf, was a short little guy, and we made these platform shoes out of 2x4s, and we wrapped them with silver duct tape. And then we took Christmas lights and wrapped them around his shoes. So he was about 5 feet, but with the platform shoes, he was about 6 feet on the stage, but he couldn't walk because they're made out of wood.
Sure.
So we plugged him into the wall, and his shoes would flash on and off, just like a Christmas tree, and he'd just stand there and play the bass. And we had this drummer who looked like a cab driver, and a singer who was just hated everybody. And you know, I had a stack of Marshall amps, and we played some assembly at Christmas. I remember people screaming.
High school assembly,
and just staring with their mouths like, what is this, you know? And like looking, just peer and see the bass player, you know, standing there with Christmas lights attached to his two platforms. It didn't go over well.
Not what you expected when you woke up.
No, the assembly, they didn't like us, and we broke the PA, and they hated us even more. And then I remember the singer punched one of the teachers while they're... It was... an unfortunate situation.
Ah, well, they weren't all like that. I mean, I won't mention all the bands that you were in, but you're also one called Smoke. It was a cover band.
Oh, God,
and you said the singer was from a bowling alley. Tell us about that whole thing.
Well,
and playing at JCC, I imagine that's a Jewish Community Center?
That was unbelievably, again, unfortunate for my career. We had a singer. We found his name was Tony Rizzo, or Razzo. We found him in a bowling alley, and he had like a polyester shirt on and a lot of chest hair and a really awful complexion. And we said, you know, we got to get this guy as a singer. And he's like, I'd like a Lou Graham. He's a singer. And I'm like, okay, is the guy we need. So I remember we played the... And Jewish Community Center, he's doing like Whole Lotta Love.
Yeah, Zeppelin, you know, covers.
Yeah, we're doing like Zeppelin, and I'm singing with him, and he's doing Whole Lotta Love, you know, and Stairway to Heaven, you know. And then he turned around to me in the middle of the gig and said, your breath smells horrible, you know, through the PA and everything. I'm like, thanks, man, cool.
What kind of an accent is that, actually?
I don't know. It's supposed to be Italian, but I don't know what it was. Yeah. I don't know where he came from. I don't know why he was in the band, and I don't know... anything about it. Sounded like a bad dream that you kind of relive over and over again, but you, again, like a car accident, you can't stop seeing it, you know. Anyway, that band kind of dissipated. Our drummer I think I remember one time he set up his drum kit on two like lunchroom tables and started doing a solo, but the table started splitting apart. So his like half his drums are going towards the kitchen and half the drums, and one of his foot on the hi-hat is going towards like, you know, bathrooms, and he's actually splitting in half. On it was just preposterous. But you live and you learn, you know.
Yeah. So just to sort of just, I won't go into the details of, but you've been around, you know, went to New York, you were in London for a little while, and yeah. I think while you were in London, Vulture Squad was a band, something about being deported.
Well, yeah, the Vulture Squad, when we put that, I had lived in New York for a while, and I met this girl from London, lovely girl, and, you know, her dad was good friends with Wilco from Dr. Feelgood, and he had written a couple songs on the first Dr. Feelgood record, and she was, we had a lot in common with music and stuff. She was a bit younger, and she said, you know, when she went back to England, she said, why don't you come back here, and you might like, I can introduce you to some of my friends who are musicians, and you might like London and stuff. So I got there, and actually I wound up living in Brighton, mm-hmm. and another friend of mine from New York came from New York to live with me in Brighton, and we put a band together. He was had a very bad drug problem at the time, so he came over to kind of kick drugs, and he lived in a snorkel jacket, you know, in a bed at the end, in my bedsit for like 2 weeks, and never got out of bed. But then he got out of bed like 2 weeks later, and he's been drug free ever since. It was the weirdest thing. But he played, he's an American guy. Then we had another guy named Tris Burns, and we had a bunch of different drummers because none of them really worked out. And we actually played in Brighton mostly. We did come back to New York to play CBGB's with the drummer from Cameo playing, which is the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
We did a few shows, then we had some bad luck with fatalities. Like, you know, that thing happened to the our bass player's girlfriend, and a few people got died, you know. So the band split up, and I stayed in the States, and they went back to England, and, you know, that's what happened there. But potentially, it could have been a good band. We did a little recording in London. I don't know whatever happened to it. And we had a lot of fun playing in Brighton and some of those cool clubs. It was a great time, really, while it lasted.
And where was it was a band called Jigsaw Man.
Right.
Johnny Rayo. When did that happen?
I don't know if Johnny Rayo was in the Jigsaw Man. He may have
a bad note taker.
No, it just gets a little bit convoluted.
Yeah.
The Jigsaw Man was I put together with Pete McClanahan, who was in Warrior Soul at the time. And David Turetsky, who actually played in Sylvain's band, and he replaced Jerry in Sylvain's band, and excellent. He was in the Devil Dogs, and great drummer. So it was a three-piece band, and we started playing around and in New York, and you know, that kind of evolved into the Greg Allen group because you know, it wasn't actually, contrary to what people might think, an ego thing to name it Greg Allen group. It was just I'd been writing songs and in so many different bands with all my material, we might as well just said, you know, why change it? Name it the Chuckle Bunnies, you know, we're sick of that name. This is what it's Greg Allen group, and we did. That's when Johnny Rayo joined. He did a bunch of shows, and he was from David Johansen's group, right. And he played with Sylvain, and he played with bunch of people, great guitar play with Mike Monroe, and you know, so he helped me do an album called Just For You, and he actually helped with a lot of those songs, you know, great guitars. He's on the new album too.
Oh really? Yeah. Very nice. All right, we'll have to circle back to that. So I know we've been jumping around in time like we're in a time machine here, but let's talk about a band that was called Blue Ruin. It was back in the early 80s.
Yep.
And that's when you were back in around Providence area.
Correct. That's when we started doing decent shows. You know?
And when you were putting it together, you were... Tell me about how you're looking for the right people in the band because of your experiences.
I wanted to get the guys that looked good. I could care less if they knew how to play. No, not really. I mean, you know, in Rhode Island, it was kind of slim pickings for your rock and roll star types.
Like, I mean, you liked the way the Dolls looked.
Yeah, I liked the way the Rolling Stones looked. Yeah. I liked the way the MC5 looked. Right. I mean, a lot of it was intertwined with fashion, contrary to, again, a lot of people think, you know, the Stones, you know, had a pre-designed thing, and Anita Pallenberg made them look. I think she had a big influence on what clothes they'd wear. Because like, you look at the whole thing. It's rock. It's entertainment. It's not like, you know, a rock band shows up with their cargo shorts on, and okay, that's fine. And I'm sure they're fine musicians, but I don't want to see that. You know, I want to see...
You want the whole thing to exude rock and roll.
I want to see the Cramps, man. You know,
My point is, you had had a lot of experiences, some not so good, but you sort of understood what you wanted in a band for forming a band at that point. So Blue Ruin became that band. Now, but it didn't. It wasn't perfect because I had asked you whenever we talked about a memory of one of the first gigs with that band. And that wasn't the greatest experience.
No.
And first of all, Blue Ruin, I guess, is slang for drunk white boys in a ghetto neighborhood.
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah, I think that's just where it came from. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you had a big show with this band. You got the band together. You had a big show ready. And you can embellish the story, but you were drunk.
Well, I don't think I'll take the fifth, you know.
Well, you said you couldn't find the singer.
Well, here's what happened. We had this singer named Freddie. He was absolutely... We found this guy. Girls loved him. He was the greatest looking guy, and he could sing. And we're like, we're going to be huge because this guy can sing. Girls love him. Unfortunately, he had disappeared a couple days before our first show, which is at Rhode Island College. And he took off with some cop's wife and locked himself in a brewery in Cranston, Rhode Island.
Oh, really?
And I believe he was tripping on acid too. Mm. So when we went to get him for the show, we went to his house, and you know, the curtain slid open just a bit, and I like, hey man, we got the show tonight. And he didn't recognize anybody in the band.
Oh, that's bad.
Bad when you have your first gig, bad when the singer doesn't recognize the band members, and you're going to be playing in about 4 hours, and you told everybody how great you're going to be at your first gig at the college. So that was a problem. So we get him there, and he doesn't know who I am. He doesn't know who the drummer is, and I'm thinking this is going to be rough, you know, when he has to remember the songs.
Yeah.
So he just stayed at the bar downstairs. About an hour later, me and the bass player said, we got to get out of here. I'm panicking, you know. And we took off to McDonald's or something. But when we came back at 4 p.m, the crew at the college rolled in a big, like, barrel full of beer, and the whole band had drank it. Our sound guy drank all the beer. Everybody was so drunk they didn't know where they were. We didn't know. I'm like, this is before the sound check.
Mm.
So I'm thinking this is going to be a disaster, you know, which it turned out to be.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it gets worse. So, you know, we get on, we play. Freddie's singing Chuckle Bunny Baby. You're just making up stuff, you know. I saw a car go by, you know, making up lyrics that don't make any sense.
Yeah.
So I kind of pushed him away. I said, you didn't know who I was anyway. So we sent him home. And that's how I became a singer, because I just remembered my own songs and I sang.
Nice.
At that point, however, everybody on the crew and the band was so drunk, except for me and the bass player, for the first time, I guess, that the audience had kind of moved back like one big crowd, like, you know, like an explosion had occurred, and they move away from the explosion, you know. And then I remember hearing through the monitors, hearing, okay, Eddie. I'm like, there's no Eddie in the group, you know. And I look up, and there's the sound guy, and he's just drunk out of his mind, and the follow spot goes right on the ceiling and explodes into this huge, big cylinder of light and becomes like the size of a dime on my head. And
So there was a problem with the guitar player, too?
Yeah, at the end of the day, he's babbling to me, and I hit him and knocked him down a flight of stairs. And the guy who promoted the show, they're holding him back, his friends, because he wants to kill us.
Yeah.
Because we're horrible.
And he told you guys will never play here
again. You will never play in this country again. You know, and I'm like, yeah, well, you know, whatever. So just a bad day, man.
Well, you chalk that up to the first gig.
And that was our first gig. And after that, we got good shows.
It was weird.
How
I mean,
that worked
Blue
out.
Ruin, after that, believe it or not, you went out to share the stage with a bunch of greats. Johnny Winter again, Rick Derringer, John Butcher Axis from around here,
Nazareth,
John